Now I'd like to introduce Jen. Jennifer Padgick holds an undergraduate honors degree in geology and philosophy and a master's of science in geology with a graduate certification in GIS from the University of Connecticut. Her past positions include she was an environmental youth program coordinator and drinking water regulator at the Department of Public Health, and she currently is at the Department of Environmental Protection and is responsible for climate change in the Office of Long Island Sound Programs, where she leads many climate efforts, including the Sentinel Monitoring and State Climate Network in Connecticut. An avid public speaker on diverse environmental topics, she's also an adjunct professor of science and engineering for multiple colleges. So I'd like to turn it over to Jen.
Thank you very much, Emma. And I can't ever begin to talk without thanking everyone, because I feel very grateful to be here today, able to share with you the stuff that has not just been my efforts, it's really been made possible from so many folks on the state, federal, and local level, and I can't even begin to thank you all, but I think you all know who you are. So hopefully some of you are tuning in and know that you're appreciated for all that you do. Certainly big thanks to EPA, the Climate Ready Estuary Programs, to Emma, and I also have to give a shout-out to Allison Cascalon, because we are lucky enough in Connecticut to have her as in our coastal zone management program working with us. So very, very lucky indeed. And so thank you all. We're going to start. I'm telling you, I talk really fast, so if you need to put up on the screen, slow down, Jen, please type so that I can do that. But I want to make sure we keep on time today. We've got a lot to cover, and I'm going to start with climate change adaptation efforts in Connecticut and beyond. This is actually a photo of a blue moon by my house. I think it's important for us to realize that there are bigger things that impact us locally, and I hope this presentation will get you thinking about it and thinking about other things that you can do for your community. So we're going to talk about, I'll talk about some of the efforts that I've done in Connecticut and that other folks have been involved in, and then, of course, the Groton Project, engaging all layers of government. I'll talk about challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned, and as well as resources and more to come. So the Great Wave of Groton, as I like to call it, I don't know how many of you are familiar with this woodblock print. It's actually the first of the series of 36 views of Mount Fuji, but most people barely notice that there's Mount Fuji in the background there. So I think that's symbolic that in the face of climate change, those things that seem big before we may kind of forget about. And you'll notice that the wave actually takes up a majority of the picture. There's three little boats here rowing with people in it hunkered down. I like to think of that as state, federal, and local government trying to figure out how they're going to deal with this big issue. What are we going to do in the great force of nature? Are we going to calmly row coordinated, or is it going to be chaos? So we get to create that ending. So the theory behind the Groton process is really, what are the different levels of government and how do they interact? How does adaptation look on the ground, especially in a coastal community? And you'll see that the work that we did was a benefit to any community, but with the issue of sea level rise, that's really something that the coastal communities have to consider. What do local governments really need? I think a lot of us spend a lot of time thinking about what they need, but do we really know? And what can we do to meet those needs? And can this much government coordination really occur? I don't mean to sound sarcastic or flippant, but there's a lot going on, and I'll speak to that later. So in Connecticut and other places, there's also so many different spheres of influence. Of course, local government, the state government, the federal and national level, and as well as the residents. So sometimes we overlap, sometimes we don't overlap as much as we should, and so we'll talk about that. At the state level in Connecticut, we have there was a law that was passed that formed an adaptation subcommittee under the Governor's Steering Committee on Climate Change. So like many states that are probably tuning in, we have high-level state efforts going on. Those four adaptation subcommittees are agriculture, natural resources, infrastructure, and public health. And a lot of their co-chairs attended the Groton workshop and have done amazing work. Historically, in Connecticut, mitigation and adaptation have kind of been done separate. My agency and some of the other agencies, the folks tend to kind of do their own thing, but you'll hear about the Adaptation Resource Toolkit and the Connecticut Climate Network are these other projects that Missy and I are are getting off the ground in the next phase of funding. And so we're really trying to merge adaptation and mitigation in these efforts. And we're also including all towns in Connecticut and beyond, and not just those coastal communities. So if you want to see the dense amount of information that Connecticut has, we do have a website, ccclimatechange.com, and you can contact myself, and I'll point you to Lynn Stoddard and some other folks that maintain that website and do some amazing stuff. So, why Groton? Well, there is a lot of leadership and innovation that occurs in Groton. I've worked with them a lot when I wore my drinking water regulator hat in the thirst protection arena. They did a drinking water quality management plan. They have a climate task force. They have great GIS. They have some splash modeling that they've done. And we worked on them on the CHAMP program, which is Coastal Hazards and Mitigation Planning Project. I'll talk about that a little bit later. We had a NOAA fellow that worked with DEP and UConn to do some work. Also, Groton is extremely politically complex. When I refer to the town of Groton, I mean the town of Groton, the city of Groton, Groton Long Point, Millink, and the fire districts, which are, yes, are all kind of separate entities within one community. So if there was any place that we were going to do it, it was there, just so that, you know, it would never have to be that hard again. And also, it's the southeastern economic hub. There's a lot of water-dependent uses, tourism, jobs. There's a naval base. There's has an amazing history in Groton and has a bright, very bright future. But I'm sure a lot of you that have coastal areas can relate. A lot of our economy is coastal, and it is extremely at risk. So on a local level, okay, as I mentioned, we wanted to unite together federal, state, and local stakeholders to discuss strategies for increasing coastal resilience. We wanted to focus on the respective roles of each agency can fill and provide recommendations on the next steps for all levels of governance. And then after those workshops, we were going to have a presentation to the town council and a final report that would help share the lessons learned with other communities. So throughout the process, we had over 95 state, federal, and local government representatives, folks from academia, folks from non-governmental organizations, and the Groton Climate Task Force. It was really amazing how many people came. We were really honored at all the interest. The first workshop really focused on the climate science, the second on how we're vulnerable, and then the third was really on some strategies and roles, plus we gave out conference call homework because Missy and I are mean like that. We also showed the Coastal Hazards website CHAMP and inundation scenarios. UConn did some surge modeling. We had guest speakers from Rhode Island as they have laws that actually require buffers and are now recognizing the sea level rise range and that range to be revisited. We also were extremely fortunate to have some folks do financial modeling of adaptation. Sam Merrill from the New England Financial Institute and Paul Kirshen from Battelle graciously came and volunteered their time and effort to show us some modeling of adaptation efforts versus and those costs associated versus not doing anything. And so we were actually able to have dollar amounts to show the town and the town to be able to show people that there was actually a cost of not adapting. It was really, really amazing. And, you know, as Emma mentioned, we had a lot of folks from federal government attend as well, and the expertise in the room was just amazing. We were really, really lucky. Plans always change. So we had all these workshop dates in mind, but Mother Nature had other plans. The first workshop was planned for December 9th. We had a nor'easter. I had to cancel. For those of you not from New England, a nor'easter is usually a wicked snowstorm that occurs. And so they were teasing me that I shouldn't be allowed to pick workshop dates anymore, but they still let me. So workshop two, we had a 500-year storm event. There was actually extreme flooding from the uplands. We still, it was later declared a disaster in several of the Connecticut counties and all throughout New England, actually, in coastal New England. We still held the event. There were some delays. There was a couple bridges washed out that they're still trying to fix. And folks from Rhode Island had to stay home. I don't know why they didn't want to pass the unpassable bridge. They could have come by boat. But we also had a gentleman from DOT, John DeCastro, who was do to present that day on some of the, being from Department of Transportation, he was going to present on some of the problem road areas and transportation issues in Groton. Well, guess what? He got to go out and get some amazing new photos, and you can see one there. So this really brought home the message of how we're vulnerable. So this is my photo of why they did not let me pick the date of the third workshop, because we could have had some brand new combo of natural weather disasters occurring. So hopefully we don't have to worry about that. So at the second workshop, we really worked on identifying vulnerabilities. We had some of the major ones that were identified were more frequent river and coastal flooding, sewer overflows, loss of coastal habitats and resources, more coastal erosion, reduced drinking water quality and supply, not only from saltwater intrusion, but flooding issues, and reduced access to key areas. So we came up with a lot more than that. So I encourage you to always bring together the people that have the areas of expertise or have multiple areas of expertise, and really present them with the impact and potential. Present them with the potential climate impacts, and really let them give you information about what's vulnerable, because you can really get far. So challenges. I see climate change as a great aggravator. The folks from EPA tell me I should quit get this patented, this phrase. But we have so many challenges that we face. Connecticut is a little different than other parts of the U.S. in that the land use decisions are really made locally. We have a home rule state, and that the towns make the decisions, the majority of the decisions regarding land use and other things. So they need our ear and our support, because they don't, always directly get from the state or federal government what they need. There's also many things we don't control enough now, and these issues are going to continue to be exacerbated through climate change. The vulnerable areas in the future are the problem areas now. Guess what? Climate change is already costing us money. There's also social and economic issues. There's social limits of adaptation. There's this cherry hazard, this perception that someone, probably the government's going to come bail me out, or it's not my job to think about this stuff or deal with this. It will be taken care of. So there really is a lot of issues, including the time scale versus risk issue. If it's not in your political term or your lifetime, or you perceive it not to be your immediate concern, you're not going to deal with it. So some of the lessons learned was that these folks at our workshop really already knew their climate science goal. We were really impressed. We could have probably pared that down a little bit, but I encourage you to, first maybe, survey your potential audience a little bit better, just to make sure. We've had some issues at the public hearings on the state level with some climate skepticism, so we anticipated we'd have some problems, but we didn't at all. These folks were amazing. Also, as far as modeling, we realized that we have all these different models. There's so many different models that you can use and everybody developed. But what we realized is we already know what's vulnerable. It's what's an issue now, and it's just going to keep getting worse. Another thing that was really, really humbling, Missy and I, in putting this workshop together, thought the up and down flow of communication was what needed. We thought the federal to the state to the local and back was important. But what we realized was the horizontal communication was really needed, too. Also, there were some amazing things that came out of this. I'll get to that later. Those federal and local discussions of support are so important, and there were so many resources on the federal level that it's just really amazing. And so I encourage people to tap into that. And then it's really become a national international model, because coordinating the government is such a crucial approach. So this is where we have a couple little laughs for the day. I want to talk to you about the whole idea of the pyramid scheme. We realized that the conference calls, as I mentioned, helped those homework assignments, helped coordinate within layers. In Connecticut, we have so many different state agencies, Department of Transportation, Office of Policy and Management, Department of Insurance, Department of Public Health, and within my own agency, Department of Environmental Protection, we had 6 different segments and 4 bureaus involved. So you can just imagine how much communication was or was not occurring before this that really should have, been occurring for climate adaptation to happen. So how can the federal government or even locals reach all these folks up and down this pyramid scheme without a coordinated process? So I like to call it the pyramid of communication. Before the Grattan Project, this was kind of the pyramid of communication before. No offense to those of you who can read Sanskrit. I cannot, so this was a mystery to me of how we were going to get all this communication going. And then during, I like to compare this to the food pyramid, and that I, you know, realized that monthly, the meat, the things that you only want to eat, you know, it's only really a special treat, is those federal government. Those are the people that you really only want to contact monthly. Hold out for when you need a big favor, big grant money, or some big level initiative, because they're busy doing lots of important things. Now, as far as weekly, those are the local and state folks that you're going to contact weekly. Probably, I would say, you know, not just your state, but other state agencies, because there's some amazing work going on regionally and nationally. Also, we get down to the daily. That those folks that we call daily are probably the academics, the non-governmental organizations, some of the other regional folks. Those fruits and nuts, pun intended, are those other employees within my agency that I would, you know, harass to help me, you know, fill in for guest speakers or to help with the workshops. And then the project team was probably, you know, the bread, the pasta, the rice, that, you know, six servings a day was, you know, Missy and some of the other folks. You should probably add in a therapist here. I would recommend that if you're going to do a process such as this. And then you have your daily physical activity. You better be beating your feet. And occasionally, I'm not going to lie, you're going to beat your head on the wall when you, you know, undertake a big project like this. I laugh when they say wine in moderation, but that's all right. So anyways, after you go through a process such as this, the communication, the pyramid of communication, you can actually make it work for you. So, you know, really those top folks at the top of those federal government folks, those are the folks that you use sparingly, but have amazing resources for you. The milk and meat group are those folks that understand what were, you know, some of those issues and may be willing to work with us. The fruits and nuts are those people that are already working with us willingly, because they have to be a little bit a little bit nuts to help us out. And those grains are those folks who are doing existing efforts that we can actually seed adaptation into. So believe it or not, there's already a lot of these grain groups occurring that you can just kind of feed your efforts into, and it'll go a lot further. So as far as Grattan, the next steps, and you'll see this in our report coming out, the town's going to continue to develop their capacity to do adaptation work. In Connecticut, we're having a huge budget crisis. I'm sure that's not unfamiliar to people elsewhere. And what we really realized was, you know, they may not be able to dedicate certain town staff or huge standalone efforts to do it, but there's other things that they could feed into. We actually have in Connecticut a SORA program, a sustainability program with the community colleges, and we've on the state level earmarked some funding that we get to actually do internships, so we can, you know, pay a community college student to actually work with a local community in Connecticut. They get internship credit and they get paid, and the town actually gets a climate project out of it. So Grattan's looking into doing something like that in place of not having, you know, staff that they can dedicate to this. They've actually had to cut some of their staff because of the budget issues. They're also going to work on conducting the townwide vulnerability assessment. That might be what they have the intern do if they can do that. And also to integrate climate considerations into existing and future community plans. In Connecticut, we have the state and then the local plans of conservation and development, which drive zoning, which drive land use. So they're working on that. Again, that iterative process, so important. They're also exploring opportunities for floodproofing existing structures and discouraging building in vulnerable locations. They're going to continue the refinement of their outreach strategy and continue sharing their experience with other communities. And that, you know, when we had the Joint Town Council meeting to roll out the workshop results, it was really amazing how many folks in the community came. We had almost 40 people attend, and they kept saying, how are we going to share this with other communities? And we said, well, you tell us. You know, we want to do that. So through the Grattan process, you know, we inspired our own state agency, DEP, in the state park section. They performed a vulnerability assessment of all their coastal properties. So I work in the Office of Long Island Sound Programs. We started an internal climate change group where we can do a self-inventory of policies and, you know, and with respect to adaptation, how are those going to work. The Connecticut Climate Network that we launched and the Adaptation Resource Toolkit for Groton and beyond, the Connecticut Climate Network is just for, you know, communities to come and meet and talk about what they're doing and think of strategies and see what's available. We were featured as a case study success in the upcoming Government Steering Committee report to the legislature, which is coming out at the end of this month. And then Groton's actually seeding adaptation to their existing mechanisms, some of which I already mentioned. And we've been highlighted at many, many workshops as a model. This is just a list of some of the places worldwide and within the U.S. and other places that it's already been mentioned at. Some of the high-level lessons learned is political support is so important. You have to integrate it into existing planning efforts. You know, you got to coordinate. Think of what you already have and work incrementally. Integrate with existing priority. Timing matters. Find what the interests are. Find that nexus and build on that. Also, don't underestimate people. Some people think because what someone else is doing is completely different from them. Maybe they're in public works. Maybe they're, you know, they don't speak our environmental language. They won't understand or they won't care. That's really not true. But don't devalue how difficult and challenging it is to find effective ways to build resilience, because there is no silver bullet. You know, we do have an opportunity to rise to the challenge, but sometimes changes and processes can be a little bit slower than we think they should be. But we already do know a lot where we're vulnerable. We have a lot of partners and initiatives that can merge. And, you know, I mentioned the Connecticut Climate Network. We're really working to pull the towns together. What can we all learn from each other? This will help us in the next phase of funding where we develop that Adaptation Resource Toolkit. And for more information, I got a bunch of links here so you can look at us that later. All the workshops are on the ICLEI and the Connecticut Climate Change website, the presentations and the videos. We've got an outlook of issue of sound outlook that over gives an overview of all the climate efforts lately that have been going on in Connecticut. This is the ICLEI website. This is the Connecticut Climate Change website. That's the sound outlook. And then Paul Kirshen and Sam Merrill's modeling work was featured in ARC User magazine, so you can read about that and see those financial impacts. And in closing, we have many resources. We have each other if we listen and coordinate. We can leverage our efforts and continuously adapt our adaptation. And I always like to end on a positive note that, you know, I was watching a show on, I believe it was Nat Geo, and they were talking about species variability. There's all these different species that we've, you know, evolved from, and Homo habilis is actually what we've evolved from. There's also Homo erectus and other species. And some anthropologists and scientists are looking back, and they're realizing that the brain of Homo habilis is larger and very different than the other species, and all the other species, you know, eventually died out. And they realized that Homo erectus and others lived during a period of extremely moderate climate. It was very steady climate. Things were pretty much the same. But Homo habilis actually was around in a period of extreme drought and then flooding. It was extreme climate variability. So they're hypothesizing that human beings have actually evolved to adapt to changing conditions. So that gives me hope in the work that we're doing. But I have to tell you that even though it's great now that everyone is realizing climate change really is real, there's a lot of work to be done, so we still have to shut up and paddle. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jen. There's a lot of great resources associated with the Groton case study, so I do encourage folks to go to the ICLEI website, to go to the Connecticut Climate Change website, and also to check back for when the final report is posted. And we can certainly share that with folks through our listserv as well when more materials come out. So